Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to the podcast, The Load Seaters, for Friday, the 3rd of May, 2024. I love the date. I love saying the date, especially when it's a Friday. I'm joined by Harry and Leo.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about Irish Patriots on the march. And I've completely forgotten what else we're going to be talking about. How everything
must
is...
must be really important.
Yeah, well, it kind of is, actually. How everything in America is anti-Semitism. And how wokies are actually taking a lot of political L's at the moment, which is always good.
Yeah, so like go woke, go broke. We've normally seen that applied to businesses, but all the woke politicians seem to be just going broke, or the political equivalent of going broke.
We're on the edge of our seats to see who's going to win the London mayoral election. there's rumours that Sadiq Khan has lost.
Really?
Yes. I don't believe it because...
Yeah. I'm already seeing some people questioning how such a thing could happen.
Yeah.
And there's two explanations if that is what's going to happen that I'm seeing so far, which is that either his constituency don't carry IDs with them.
Yeah.
Although his constituency...
Or they can't drive.
Those IDs always seem to be discovered in the rubble at the bottom of skyscrapers. So they seem to be indestructible and always on their person.
But left at home for some reason today.
Yeah.
But anyway, so before we start, we have Lads Hour number 32, which is Callum's one, talking about Fallout. Have you ever played Fallout?
I've never played Fallout, but I need I got a PlayStation 4, so I want a game to play, but all the games are just boring admin now.
Yeah, that is...
PlayStation, do you mean PS5 or is it an actual PlayStation 4 that you've got?
PlayStation 4.
Plenty of great games on the PlayStation 4. You should play Bloodborne. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, well, at 3 o'clock...
I'm trying to be helpful here, guys.
I got this game, save it for the thing, but I got this game Destiny 2 and it's literally, man, it's like, I've got a job.
Why am I also having to do a job?
Yeah, it's like all this stuff and like, you know, like you're constantly in the menus, like giving yourself a gauntlet or something.
Bloodborne, you get to go around Gothic Edinburgh, destroy werewolves and Lovecraftian monsters.
That sounds better.
Average night out in Scotland. But anyway, join us at 3 o'clock for the Fallout Lads Hour. It's going to be fun. So let's begin. Irish Patriots are on the march in Ireland, which is great because there's a lot of energy there that we just don't have here.
Yeah.
Like everything is just turning to absolute crap here. And for some reason, no one does anything about it. For some reason, we've just got the worst politicians. Sorry.
Well, we've been sort of cowed. The British people have been cowed into submission.
Totally.
We've been just culturally battered down with, you know, constant accusations of racism. You know, if anybody questions mass migration, whatever the reason, I mean, a lot of people have a very sort of, you could say, woke reasons for wanting to stop mass migration. I'm worried about the effect it'll have on, you know, my family and, you know, my friends who are already immigrants. They'll get the backlash when there's eventually a big backlash if there's, you know, unsustainable migration. But yeah, in Ireland, I guess, because their history, they never had an empire, and they never maybe a small building empire in London, but you know, it's not the same as they're not burdened by this guilt that British people have been sort of indoctrinated into having.
As far as I'm aware as well, the Irish government has not been organising a very effective campaign against its own citizens in the same way that the English government, the British government has for the past 50 years. I mean, the British government really, from the moment the Conservatives kicked out Enoch Powell onwards, have created a terrifying and effective mechanism to keep out all dissent. Anybody who would want to reverse the flow of migration from any halls of power.
Well, if you'd spent 300 years controlling a world empire, you'd probably build up some institutional knowledge on how to suppress the natives, right?
Mm. I think Irish less so.
Yeah, that's being applied to us. The Irish Republic, obviously, less so. But before we carry on, we want to hire you if you are a production manager and if you've got skills in videography, audio, and editing work, and you're available in London or Swindon, do send us an email on loadseats.com/careers.
Are you moving to London? You open a studio in London?
Answering questions.
Are you interested in buying, Leo?
We may be doing lots of interesting things this year, and you can be a part of it. Anyway, so this is the kind of energy that I'm talking about. Now, we used to see this kind of energy about a decade ago, when certain unmentionable peoples, who were proven right on every count, ran organizations, far-right evil organizations, like the English Defence League, but that, of course, as you say, was beaten out of us because turns out they were racist. Turns out everyone's a racist. But the Irish have decided, no, we actually don't care. Ireland for the Irish, which used to be Sinn Féin's position until about 5 minutes ago. Became Ireland for everyone.
Yeah.
It's like, right, okay. So good luck with the green and orange lads. But yeah, no, these are everywhere. Lots and lots and lots of people out just on a regular day protesting. Of course, you've got the defenders of the status quo at the back, the police protecting them. And this is just, again, I love to see it, man. I absolutely love to see the Irish Patriots, the sea of flags, and people actually getting out there and being present. Because that's the thing that the British, in particular the English, are really guilty of just not doing at this point. We're just not out in the streets. We're not present. We've just completely accepted that the global order has conquered us and that we're to be just a colony of, I guess, the World Economic Forum, to be honest.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think you don't see, even though people get out and wave the flags in Scotland, it's very much a sort of anti-English thing.
Yes.
Rather than a, you know, they've made their differentiating point because, you know, the SNP have to be, yeah, and the Scottish Nationalists have to be different from the English in every point. So they made that, that they are going to welcome everybody from around the world. But they can safely say that because nobody wants to move to Scotland.
Which,
you know,
is,
I mean,
absolutely true. If you look at the demographics in the last census, like, all of the migrants are in England.
Yeah, yeah.
Like 95% Scottish in Scotland still.
Yeah, so if people move to Scotland, it's mostly to sort of get into England more easily. And England does have incredibly porous borders. So I shared a flat with this guy, Bernardo, from Brazil. He was an illegal immigrant and he got deported.
What?
He got deported. He was a sound guy. But
he
was driving around with no license and stuff. He was delivering flowers for, like, you know, Royal Bank of Scotland and stuff.
A delivery driver.
But he got caught in a road rage thing, got sent back. And but then he just came in. He went to Ireland, met up with his girlfriend who's English, and then came across in the ferry. No checks or anything. I mean, this is a while back. So this, I guess, Brexit might have changed that. But you can
probably,
like, I'd
be
shocked. England is so porous.
Yeah. No. God, I hate the way this country.
I was just going to add as well that Scotland right now doesn't have many immigrants, but if UBI is implemented, as there are some plans to do so, which I think would offer 25 grand a year for doing absolutely nothing.
Isn't
in
that
Scotland.
Just the Scottish lifestyle anyway?
Well, it's being codified this time. So if they put that into law, then I see some migration up north. And, you know, go for it. Do it, please.
So this is why
off our hands.
This is why Ireland, because per capita, Ireland has had more immigration than England, especially in recent years.
Yeah.
And it's because Ireland is an incredibly generous welfare system, and I think they're also generous to immigrants as well.
They're also an incredibly small country. There are only 5 million people in the Republic of Ireland. You can see why there's a lot more. The sense of community feels a lot more closely knit, which is nice. You get it in regional areas of England, but unfortunately, we're just not seeing it.
You get cities in Ireland, but as far as I can tell from creators that I've watched who are from Ireland, they say that Ireland is still mostly fields. Mm-hmm. It's still mostly fields with
very
villages here and there. So, of course, that's going to create a more communal mindset. And even in the cities, you can be sure that those people are going to be bringing that mindset into the cities.
Yeah, Dublin has sped run the London experience. Unironically, it's just been, you know, in the last couple of years, Dublin has turned itself into London. And so, you know, be warned, this is going to keep happening. The Dublinification of the rest of Ireland will just continue. It'll spread out like a cancer. And you can look at the British census if you want to see the effect of it. And so anyway, you've got quite a lot of direct action. Although that's not the one I wanted, this one. You've got quite a lot of direct action. And now, so I don't endorse this. I actually found this to be quite difficult to watch. So this is a local community that have approached the Irish contractors who are working on, as described by Gerard Murphy here, a migrant plantation centre in County Wicklow. And the community came out to basically persuade him to stop working, to pack up his tools and go. So what the left would call direct action. Now, I feel a bit bad about this because, I mean, in one way, yes, this is a really good way of doing things because the guy is polite and he's effective in his rhetoric. But then one of the other guys just off camera just starts shouting at him and intimidating him. And so it's like, right, this guy is just doing his job. Now, I hate that to be the excuse to use, but there's something about it that doesn't sit entirely right. But apparently they were successful in this. And so I thought we'd have a look at what they're protesting against. This is Abdul. He's an asylum seeker. He's got 6 children and a wife in Afghanistan, and he doesn't work. But let's listen to Abdul explain his situation, shall we?
And how does it work? When did you came to Ireland? You said 8 months ago, yes? From England or from Afghanistan?
From Afghanistan, through different routes.
Okay.
My English is good.
Yeah, you're very good English, like, you know, so very nice.
He doesn't talk very loudly, and his English isn't great. But he's just sat around in the park in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
And milling about?
Just literally milling about.
So he's already absorbed the Irish culture.
No, he hasn't got a Guinness in his hand. You know? His wife's in Afghanistan. He can't...
Yeah, there's an Irish next level milling that he's not achieved yet.
But you can see why people would be annoyed. I mean, this is I'm not Irish, but I find it's really insufferable. Because why should this absolute slacker be given more than enough money to live in Dublin, again, one of the most expensive places in Ireland, to just sit around? How long is this going to go on for?
Yeah, and
is this indefinite?
One of the arguments, the pro-immigration arguments, is that it's essential because, you know, Western economies are essentially a Ponzi scheme. We've got an aging population that needs to be supported by bringing in fresh workers. But we're not even getting the Ponzi scheme right. We're bringing people in at the top to slack and be supported by everybody else.
Literal dependence being imported.
Yeah, yeah.
What they basically get is socialism for the foreigners.
Yeah.
They just get over here and they get to be the socialist, except they don't even have to work, really.
Yeah. And you get the privilege of paying for it, Harry. Your taxes...
Well, I'm not Irish.
Well, no.
I hope that Irish.
You think this isn't happening here?
Well, of course I know it's happening
it's
here.
It's the same bloody thing.
I mean,
thing.
I could at least take solace that this...
It's happening to the Irish
too. This fine gentleman, I'm not funding him specifically until he gets on a ferry and gets here.
Yeah, he might just walk across the border into Northern Ireland. But anyway, so this I think is an understandable and what I think is a grassroots movement in Ireland. I think it's completely understandable why the Irish have a strong sense of self because, and I guess I'm going to have to give to them centuries of oppression. And this is understandable that, a bunch of foreigners are being brought in by a globalist government to sit, like you say, you know, kind of at the top as dependents on the working, honest Irish people who are paying all the taxes, right? You don't need a conspiracy theory to explain why tens of thousands of Irish people might be like, I might protest this.
Yeah.
However...
It's also, you must say, that the same narratives that have worked for so long against the British, that you are a colonizer, you're evil, you enslaved people, etc., it won't work on the Irish because their entire identity has been forged over hundreds of years of ethnic solidarity against the English.
Mm. Yeah, and against oppression, which is fair. And so if you're an Irish leftist and you're looking at this going, the Irish people seem to have a problem with the globalism and communism we're trying to impose on them. Who can we blame for it? Because it can't be a homegrown phenomenon. It has to be foreigners. It has to be the British. The real foreign threat, British imperialism.
Are the British viewed in Ireland like the Jews are in some other communities? they've got the bog over there, British occupied government.
Honestly, that is the opinion of Republicans against fascism. You'll never see Irish fascists opposing British occupation and partition. They prefer to attack defenseless men, women, and children fleeing war and poverty. Far right, cowards and bigots, never patriots. And for anyone just listening, they've got some posters, British soldiers occupying our country, the foreign threat supported by Irish fascists. It's like, my God, you know, I wish we were half the country you guys make us out to be. You know, I can't even imagine. Like, you're 100 years out of date, my friends. It's just ridiculous nonsense. I mean, for example, there's this chap is like so-called Irish patriots are so obviously the stooges of foreign interests. It's like, whoa, hang on. You're the immigrants in, Irish out parties. You're the guys who support literally every foreign interest in the world until someone from outside of Ireland is like, hey, guys, maybe Ireland should be for the Irish. And like, ugh, disgusting foreigners.
It is interesting. It must be such a contradiction within these people's minds, a paradox, that ethnic identity doesn't matter at all, presumably, to the Irish leftist, because anybody can be Irish who's just got off the boat, except for those damned British.
Yes.
In which case their ethnic identity is always going to be held over them.
Yes.
And follow them like a shadow wherever yes. they go.
Evil British elves.
How can you hold these two ideas in your mind at the same time?
I don't know. I mean, we have a lot of non-white British people, so maybe we could put them in charge of the discourse between the Irish leftists and Britain.
But I mean, as soon as they step over the border, surely they're Irish now.
Well, I mean, that's what I thought. But apparently one of the main organisers, a former NATO officer, it's like, ah, yes, NATO, the evil empire of the British? Like, what are we talking about? Ireland isn't actually a member of NATO, just for anyone who doesn't know. I mean, there's a map of NATO.
Yeah, Ireland's the ultimate freeloader when it comes to defence. So their defence budget is like 0.25% of GDP or something.
Do you know how big the Irish army is?
It's like 600 people or something.
7,000 people. Right. But yeah, it literally is. Like, you couldn't stop any kind of invasion with that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, I've not seen this map before. How is Greenland? What's Greenland offering?
Strategic location. I'm not offering
a ice desert.
Yeah, but it's a strategic location to go across the Arctic to get to Russia, right?
I suppose so, yeah.
It's only an ice desert for the next 20 years, and then apparently global warming is going to turn it into
I'm beautiful land.
Yeah, so you got to think ahead on these things. But yeah, you are right. Ireland is a bit of a freeloader when it comes to the national defence, but to be fair, you don't have to worry about it. But the point being, like, this sort of like, oh, look, he's a NATO officer. It's like, NATO isn't the British Empire and doesn't have designs on occupying Ireland with British troops, you lunatics. What are you talking about? And so anyway, the Irish far right is a barely disguised foreign-funded psyop to try and stop Sinn Féin from taking power.
So all those people we saw marching and talking to the contractors and stuff, they
all
were
NATO
all,
members, I guess.
And they were all fake. They were all fake. Based in America and just fake accounts.
And the really clever thing about foreign imperialism over Ireland is it comes in the guise of Ireland for the Irish. That's really clever.
This is my new favourite Blue Anon conspiracy theory. I've not experienced.
It's brilliant because you might think that a foreign imperial movement might say Ireland for everyone.
Yeah.
Actually, so we can get all the foreigners
like
into Ireland.
Like Sinn Féin does.
Like Sinn Féin does, yes. So we can get all the foreigners into Ireland and make sure that the Irish have got no moral weaponry to kick them out. But no, apparently, the far right have been completely co-opted by the big brain British long game, which is making sure the Irish are very patriotic about their own country. Now, I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, this lovely communist account thinks that Irish patriots don't listen to enough trad music. They're not involved in trade unions. They don't speak Irish, so they can't be Irish people. But they are linked with British fascism, because British is now a fascist country.
To be fair, on one point,
go on.
Patriotic nationalists should listen to more traditional folk music from their nation.
I don't like it, though.
It's great. You should listen to more British folk music, honestly. Also, I'm just confused now. So is this man insinuating, and the other people behind him, that Conor McGregor is a NATO agent?
I guess he is, yeah.
Sense to me.
He's a British soldier or something. I don't know.
And is he also suggesting that immigrants to Ireland do all these things, like speak Gaelic and listen to traditional Irish music?
Well, that's a great point, isn't it? It's like, right, so the Irish patriots, as in people born and raised in Ireland for generations upon generations, well, they don't speak Irish, they don't listen to trad music, they don't get actively involved in social campaigns and not on the trade unions, so they're not really Irish people. They are actually British people because they're linked with British fascism. Some of them are former British soldiers. They have a warped grasp of Irish history, a mythical notion of the ideal Irish emigrant, and Anglo-American culture war lingo. Ah, right. Anglo-American culture war lingo. They must be really in favor of trans rights, or LGBT, or something like that, because that is also Anglo-American culture war lingo. As Sky News pointed out, well, hang on a second. A lot of people outside of Ireland are talking about Ireland.
Wow.
Like, sorry. I thought we were a global, outward-facing, like, everyone can be Irish, can't they?
And the people complaining about this would never say anything about Israel.
Yeah. They've got nothing to say about foreign countries either.
What this is, they're trying to insinuate that these are all outside agents, when in reality, it's more like at the end of Breaking Bad, when Walt is behind the glass as Hank's about to get shot. No, don't do it! Don't let them in!
Oh! Yeah, that's literally all this is.
It's going, no, don't do it!
No. What they're mistaking here, obviously, is the fact that we non-Irish people are cheering on the Irish Patriots. We are giving them moral support because they're doing the right thing, resisting the globalist takeover of their country. Good on you, lads. Keep going. We're totally behind you. I mean, they complain here. Well, it was American users. In fact, they've got a little graph here. Look, people outside of America were talking about it when it hit the news. No kidding. And here's the breakdown. You know, there were 100,000 posts on Twitter about from the United States and only 42,000 from Ireland. It's like, well, okay, hang on, guys. I think, is it anything to do with Irish expats to America?
Yeah, there's a huge diaspora in America.
Yeah, maybe there are loads of Irishmen in America or descendants of Irishmen in America. I mean, it's really not, again, conspiracy theory. I don't know. But
could this also be a function of that dreaded couple of words that keeps getting bandied about for purely racist reasons, I'm sure.
Go on.
Per capita. Dun, dun, dun. Might it have something to do with that?
This is an issue of the per capita skull being pushed up the hill, Sisyphean style. But as they say, Tommy Robinson, an English far-right activist, attracted the fourth most engagement on his posts on Twitter. He's Irish descended, yeah. So that's exactly the point. You just can't get away from him. Mentioning the town were engaged with 42,000 times. My goodness. So what we're going to do is look at things that aren't foreign influence in Ireland, such as Sheikh Dr. Umar al-Qadri, who says, a united Ireland is inevitable. What? Who are you? Why does this matter to you? Well, let's have a look at his bio and see what. Right, so he's an independent MEP candidate from Dublin. He's the founder of Irish Muslim Council. He's Dutch, Pakistani, Irish. Right, this isn't foreign influence. Right, this is normal, native, homegrown Irish influence. Everything about this man is Irish, and so he has opinions on the future of Ireland, that a united Ireland is inevitable. Okay, all right, whatever. We can pop over to Northern Ireland as well, because this same sort of thing is happening in Northern Ireland, except the protests aren't quite as interesting, where we have the first mayor of Derry, Lillian Sioni Barr, who describes herself, quote, I am a proud Maasai woman and Derry girl. Right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. That's exactly how this works.
I guess the Maasai warriors drink a lot of dairy.
I mean, they do. That's true.
Yeah.
But she says, having initially come to Derry as a refugee, first facing an uncertain future, I can now truly say that my family have found their home. What's the war that the Maasai have been engaged in that caused her to be a refugee?
Was that the one with Michael Caine in it?
I don't know, actually. And she recently was on TV. Complaining because Irish patriots in Ireland are terrorists, actually. I thought we'd just listen to this. Quite entertaining, actually.
Everyone is living on edge right now, and we need to do something about it. We cannot continue ignoring that this is a small minority of far-right movement. It is an organized terrorist group of people who want to harm immigrants in this country, and we have to take action now. We can't keep on calling them a small, dangerous group of people, because it is an organized group of people who are radicalizing young people and encouraging them to go and harm others who are just living peacefully, who wants to live a peaceful life in this country.
Irish accent sounding a bit different lately.
Yeah. It's
got a bit less of that sing-songy vibe.
Yeah, for me, it's the bit at the end, you know, who just wants to live a peaceful life in this country.
Remember that Algerian guy who just wanted to live a peaceful life and stab people?
Let's not take the worst examples of the sort of people who've come. But the thing is, you living a peaceful life in the country you're in does come at the expense of the people who are already in the country. You are competing with them, for example, for the position of the mayor of Derry. I mean,
but she was voted in, right? The people must have risen up in love and admiration for her and all voted for her.
It's interesting that you say that, because she became Northern Ireland's first black mayor, obviously. And the selection process, quote, as the BBC tell us, has been criticised by some party members as undemocratic and prompted one councillor's resignation. Jason Barr will continue as an independent councillor because he didn't become the deputy mayor and refused it because it was not an easy decision to make, but he found he was left in an untenable position due to decisions made by the management committee. Right. So it was rigged to put the diversity in place.
Mm.
And he got screwed out of it. And so he was like, well, there we go. And so now Derry is being run by a proud Maasai woman, but it is the far right that are the tools of foreign influence.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Keep going, Irish patriots. You're doing a great job.
She should be able to run it well, because the Maasai are really good at running.
They're really good at jumping as well.
And jumping, yeah.
Like they've got this...
They're famous for running, long distance running.
They've got this actual culture where they jump really high up in the air for some reason. They all do it. I remember watching videos in school.
And then...
It's cool, fair enough. There's nothing dishonourable about it.
What's your culture achieved? Well, great works of art, civilization.
We went across
the world and conquered so much. What does your culture do? Well, we jump high.
Yeah, but our culture is now Greg's, Harry.
They do have some cool stuff as well. Like they run, they chase animals for miles, and they drink blood from cows. Really, do this cool stuff.
So
it's like every cult that's Scotland.
High jumping vampire culture. Well, you've sold me. Give this woman a medal.
Oh, give her the mayorality.
Yeah, she's got it.
She will get
mayor's medal.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we'll leave that there.
All right, then. Let's go on to talk about how everything is now anti-Semitism in America. Have you thought about something while on a college campus or anything that's maybe funded by the US federal government? Well, I'm sorry, that's very anti-Semitic of you. Do you read the Bible? Have you ever read something called the Gospels of the New Testament? Well, I'm sorry, you're very anti-Semitic and you'll have to go to prison now. So, yes, there's...
How's Ben Shapiro taking this?
You know, I've not looked. I've got something from Matt Walsh, though, who is employed by Ben Shapiro.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to be the next one
at
to
At time of
go?
Recording.
That is the question, is that Matt Walsh has been a bit on the edge recently when he's been discussing things to do with Israel-Palestine, when he's been discussing these laws. Although, to be fair, he's gone about it very well, which is criticizing them from a legal standpoint, which is what I intend to do here as well, because the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act has passed in America and will be...
Oh, it passed?
It's gone through the House of Representatives, right. And I think it's going through the Senate next.
Right.
So we'll see how it fares in the Senate, but from what I've seen, there have already been a number of senators who have put forward their praise for the bill. So I would imagine that it will pass, either that or maybe it'll get stopped in the 11th hour. We'll find out.
Yeah. But wouldn't it sort of breach the Constitution?
Yes.
From what I've seen.
Yes, clearly. But the question is not whether anything is constitutional.
Is the Constitution anti-Semitic?
Perhaps. But, well, it doesn't actually mention anything to do with the Bible. So according to these new laws, no, it's not.
Oh, okay.
Well, the question is, as always, when it comes to the Constitution, is not whether it lives up to the Constitution, is who is interpreting the Constitution? Do they care about the Constitution? Who is enforcing this? Do they care about the Constitution?
Well, I mean, you'd think it'd be the Supreme Court who interprets it, and you'd think they'd care.
Well, I would imagine if it went through the current Supreme Court that it wouldn't stand up for very long, because the current Supreme Court has actually been...
Pretty good.
Pretty good at striking down unconstitutional laws and
abortion.
Measures.
I don't think so, you whores.
I know. I still can't believe that they managed to... Hoes were so mad. Still are in some states. But before I get into the details, we've got an amazing career opportunity that's available if you go onto our website to lotuseaters.com/career-production-manager. We are looking for a production manager with skills in videography, audio, and editing available to work in the London or Swindon areas. So if you're interested in the full job specification, go to our website, go to that link that I just said, and check it out and apply if you're interested and if you fit the description. So getting onto it. So here's the news. The Anti-Semitism Awareness Act has a lot of implications for free speech in the US, and it's being presented as in response to a lot of the college campus protests that are going on across America right now, because there are a lot of leftists on American campuses who are protesting the actions that Israel is taking against Palestine and Gaza. Yeah. And we'll see if that actually holds up, if it's something that's actually coming about purely in response to that. Because I think there's an argument to say that it's not, and it seems to me to be something that's a little bit more coordinated and long-term than just that, of course, if it manages to pass through. So what it says
just here, a quick thing here. I can't believe they called it the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. Who isn't aware of anti-Semitism?
Everybody is aware of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, but
from
like,
the moment you go through a public school system.
By the way, Hitler hated the Jews and he killed them. Oh, really? Okay.
It's one of the things that is truly hammered into your head as a child in our school system. So I'll just read through. So the House of Representatives overwhelmingly approved the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act on Wednesday. It comes as campus protests are taking place across the country, while protests have had the support of many Jewish college students, because, of course, being that they're not entirely one massive umbrella block that thinks as a hive mind, there have been Jewish organizations and Jewish individuals who have not been pro-Israel. There's been lots of debates going on with that, but many others have said that they feel intimidated and unsafe. The Anti-Semitism Awareness Act could make it easier for concerned students to file civil rights complaints. I believe that's under Title 6 of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 or 5? It's 64, right? CBS New York spoke with representatives Mike Lawler and Josh Gottheimer, two sponsors of the bipartisan bill. So it's bipartisan. It's both parties, because you know if there's one thing both parties in the US will be able to put their differences aside for is Israel.
Giving money to Israel,
Yes.
And getting money back from Israel.
APAC
or whatever it's
called. APAC, they're one of the biggest funders, We need to be able to define anti-Semitism, Lawler said. The Anti-Semitism Awareness Act directs the Department of Education to use the definition promulgated by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance when enforcing federal anti-discrimination laws. Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred toward Jews, the definition says. It goes on to define some examples, and they say, Lawler says, when you hear from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That's calling for the eradication of Jews from the state of Israel, according to Lawler. Colleges that fail to protect Jewish students could face civil rights enforcement. Critics of the new legislation, including Representative Jerry Nadler of New York, say the bill sweeps too broadly and would chill constitutionally protected free speech, including legitimate criticism of Israel.
Really?
However, others say speech has limits.
And some of
the rhetoric crosses the line into harassment. Now, where have we heard that before? Where have we heard that before? Who have we heard that kind of rhetoric weaponized against?
Well, weirdly, it came from the left, weaponized against people like us.
Yeah.
And suddenly now, because they're like, we hate Israel, it's like, wow, speech has limits.
Well, that's the...
I don't know,
I'm just saying that's what I've heard.
That's the interesting thing, isn't it? In 2020, the left were allowed in many times to burn cities down.
Everywhere.
And had CNN and other news organizations covering for them. It was fiery, but mostly peaceful.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't judge them as a group. But this might be the first time in over a decade, probably since Occupy Wall Street, that anybody on the left has been protesting something that the system wasn't automatically approving for them. They're not on the side of power this one time. And now they're using it as saying, ha ha, see, we were the freedom fighters the entire time. But let's see what this actual piece of legislation says. It's only about 6 pages long, so it's very easy to go through. I'll read some of the more important things it says here. So as noted in the U.S. National Strategy to Counter Anti-Semitism issued by the White House on May 25th, 2023, so this is a national strategy to counter anti-Semitism. That's something that the U.S. finds very important.
Sorry, this was written in 2023?
Yes, it's the Anti-Semitism Awareness Bill 2023.
So they've had this for a while then?
Yes, well, it's also based off of an executive order 13899, which was put through on December 11th in 2019. So it was a Trump executive order which extended protections against discrimination under the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to individuals subjected to anti-Semitism on college and university campuses, and tasked federal agencies to consider the IHRA working definition of anti-Semitism when enforcing Title VI.
It really is the one thing they both agree on.
Yeah, so this has been something that's actually been in the back burner for a long time. This is codifying that executive order into law and being passed through the representatives and the Senate as well. So that's why I'm saying that it seems a bit cheeky for them to say that this has only been in response to these college protests. This seems to have been something that they've been cooking up for a while.
Yeah.
But it's critical, they say here, to A, increase awareness and understanding of anti-Semitism, including its threat to America, B, improve safety and security for Jewish communities, C, reverse the normalization of anti-Semitism and counter anti-Semitic discrimination, and D, expand communication and collaboration between communities. Now, it's been a big criticism over the past few months of people in the news who have been saying that anti-Semitism's on the rise. For the past few years, anti-Semitism is rising and rising. Where is all this anti-Semitism coming from? It's been very easy to turn around and say, well, you've been letting in massive numbers of people who are coming from explicitly anti-Semitic countries.
But there's also something more to it than that, because, okay, so let's assume that we're not talking about the Middle Eastern immigrants. One of the ways that this kind of concern persists is because in the sort of Anglo mind, after World War II, the Anglos were on the side of actually don't exterminate the Jews. Mm. And so that was a kind of moral responsibility that we lived up to, whereas, of course, the fascist side was on the side of exterminating the Jews. If you're from South America, you don't care about that at all. There's nothing to do with you. Mm. This is not your interest whatsoever. And if you're looking at like Chuck Schumer or something, and you're looking at the amount of money they're sending to Israel and stuff, you might, well, I just don't care. Mm. So it's about like it's not just the anti-Semitic elements that are coming from the Middle East. It's also about the historic continuity of the sentiment that the Anglos carry that these new foreigners just don't.
And also the sort of evolution of critical race theory, which started in universities, Harvard Law School. So it, you know, sees the whole world through this sort of power structure of oppressed and oppressors and victims and persecutors. And has also been explicitly anti-white, even though, you know, if you say, oh, critical race theory is anti-white, you get condemned as a racist. They're literally chanting, like, abolish whiteness.
Yeah, I mean,
they say worse than that, because like you mentioned, it's interesting that the US government is completely united in its defense of Jewish communities. And if that's what the representatives who have been voted into America want to protect, you know, they are the representatives. That's they have the remit to do that. But it's interesting that they go very, very far to protect these communities while at the same time, people like Nicole Hannah-Jones, for a long time, she's been around since the 90s, head of the 1619 Project, which is part of school curriculums in some part of the US, teaches people that white people are evil, and she's got quotes like this: the white race is the biggest murderer, rapist, pillager, and thief of the modern world. The crimes they committed were unnecessarily cruel and can only be described as acts of the devil. Now, by any kind of definition that we all have to adhere by, that would classify as hate speech. Mm. That is a form of slander towards an entire group of people. That's taking a broad swath of people who are all of the same background and applying horrible, horrible terms, dehumanizing terms to them. She gets awards. She gets a massive project with the New York Times.
Yep.
She gets millions of dollars, I assume. And the US government doesn't unite to protect its white constituents, which are still, for the time being, the majority population of the US.
This is also just not true either. I mean, I've recently been researching the sack of Benin, and the things that the British found as they were walking into Benin, it's just human sacrifice. Mm.
Is this the streets running with blood?
Yeah, where it was called the City of Blood.
Yeah, that's it, the City of Blood. They were sending, yeah. I've read some of those letters as well. It's horrifying. Yeah.
It's just like literally like women chained to the ground with their organs cut out and displayed while they're still alive.
Right, jeez.
Like it honestly, it's the most horrific stuff.
So,
and it's like, okay, yeah, that's just not accurate. You know? Yeah. Sorry.
But all of this...
With her rhetoric, so anybody growing up in the 90s, you know, through the noughties would be exposed to this and would see the precedent being set, oh, these, you know, white people are oppressors, so, you know, they can be dehumanized, we can shout what we like at them. So it sets the stage for the anti-Semitism we see now, because for a lot of people on the left, they see Jews as the sort of ultimate white people.
Yeah.
They can do, but I think a lot of it also comes from just general criticism of the Israel government, because they see what's going on. Whether I'm not going to get into the details, but a lot of them see what the Israeli government is doing as illegitimate, very hostile towards the population of Gaza, and they criticize it on that basis. And the fact that this is allowed, and this is sponsored in many ways by the regime, whereas the US government unites to ensure that anti-Semitism is something that's legally outlawed, shows where the priorities are, shows which groups are preferred. in the US government and in the West in general. And in many cases does mean that a lot of people who say that there's an undue amount of influence coming from Israel through AIPAC and other large organizations, through organizations that present themselves as Jewish, like the ADL, is warranted. So that a lot of people are saying, as always, as they always do, if you're going to put this into law to make these people not just a protected class, but the most special protected class that nobody can say anything against, even if it's legitimate criticism, you are adding to these concerns that people have. You are legitimizing the conspiracies that some people spread about the undue influence of these groups.
And as you're absolutely right to say, the critical race theory is hyper-focused on power relations as well. Because when you've got organizations like this that are exerting power over the US government, the senators and politicians, congressmen, all agree, and they're both like, yes, we agree, this is one thing. That's power acting in the process of it. And so critical race theorists, they hardly even talk about white people anymore. They are actually just talking about Jews now. So it's probably inevitable this would triangulate on groups like this.
And they also see any sort of success or prosperity or wealth as it's been, you know, wealth is a zero-sum game. So if you've got it, it's because you stole it from somewhere else. Wealth isn't something that's generated. I don't know how they consider we've still got the same amount of wealth today as when we were cavemen. But that's for their logical circuits. But yeah, so they look at Israel and they see this wealthy, prosperous, functioning country, as opposed to the, you know, the millions of square miles around it that are not wealthy, prosperous, or functioning. And they're like, they must have stolen all that functioning prosperity from the people around them.
Some of the Arab countries are doing all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so some of them.
Some have got oil.
Yeah, but so then like two of the people in the country do all right.
Yeah.
But again, what's important now that we've shown that it's working off of this definition, so the Title VI violations that you can file a civil rights lawsuit against are going by the definitions of anti-Semitism that are held by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. So it's worth taking a look and seeing what their definitions are. So they say here, what was quoted earlier, anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed towards Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, toward Jewish community institutions and religious facilities. So apart from the physical manifestations, which is violence, that's all a bit vague. That's very, very broad and vague. They carry on to say, manifestations might include targeting of the state of Israel conceived as a Jewish collectivity. However, criticism of Israel similar to that leveled against any other country cannot be regarded as anti-Semitic. Again,
are they saying that Israel is a Jewish state is anti-Semitic?
No, I think what they're saying is that it is a Jewish collective state. Right. So if you have undue criticism of Israel, you're unduly criticizing all Jews.
Oh, right.
So, it's identifying all of Jewry with Israel.
Right.
But once again, with this, where it adds that little qualifier at the end, is who determines what is criticism similar to leveled against other countries? I mean, who determines that? Who decides that? I would assume it's this organization. So what are some more of the examples that they say? So you've got some standard ones: calling for, aiding, or justifying the killing or harming of Jews in the name of radical ideology or an extremist view of religion. Obviously, calling for harm.
Yeah.
That's something we all recognize is wrong.
Sure.
What else do they have? Making mendacious, dehumanizing, demonizing, or stereotypical allegations about Jews as such, or the power of Jews as a collective, such as, especially but not exclusively, the myth about a world Jewish conspiracy or of Jews controlling the media, economy, government, or other societal institutions. Now,
all I'm thinking is Jeremy Corbyn is sweating. Like, what?
I don't want to feed into any conspiracies, and certainly I don't think really they control the world or anything, but right, Ron DeSantis signs anti-Semitism law in Israel for Florida. This whole thing comes from a Trump executive order. This entire thing is a special carve-out made for a particular group. The ADL, who present themselves as a specifically Jewish organization, train the FBI in how to handle hate speech crimes, and the ADL was able to pressure Iceland into not banning male circumcision. So this, again, is feeding in to that perception.
The problem is that this isn't about actual direct control. This is about sympathetic influence. Trump willingly did all of this, you know, like all of these things.
Of course.
DeSantis willingly did this. He didn't like have Jewish lobby, wrestling.
The thing about the whole like Jewish world conspiracy, thing is that if you were to go with that, you would just assume that nobody else in the world who isn't of a Jewish background has any agency own actions.
Yeah.
Of course, Trump did that willingly. Of course, Ron DeSantis chooses to do this as well. So if you disagree with the actions overall, you also have to include a lot of non-Jewish people into it as well. Yeah. But of course, it does seem that the like Elon Musk, in responding to people talking about this, said that he's openly philo-Semitic.
Yeah.
It does seem that there are a lot of people in power who
philo-Semitic, what does that mean?
Super positive towards them as a group. Yeah. And it does seem that there is a lot of that sentiment within the halls of power. But carrying on, they say, accusing Jewish citizens of being more loyal to Israel are the alleged priorities of Jews worldwide than to the interests of their own nations. And using the symbols and images associated with classic anti-Semitism, e.g., claims of Jews killing Jesus or the blood libel, to characterize Israel or Israelis. Now, so that is in the Gospels. That's what the Gospel says.
Yes.
Some people will quibble over this and say, well, actually, it was the Romans that did it. But
nonsense.
If you read the Bible...
Pontius Pilate literally says, I wash my hands of this. I don't know why the Pharisees want him dead. I don't care.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with me.
Now, it would be wrong to use those sorts of claims to justify violence towards people.
Obviously.
But everything except for the calls of violence listed under here should just fall under free speech.
Yeah.
Criticizing a foreign government, criticizing individuals or groups for their actions, whether or not you're right or wrong, it should all fall under freedom of speech.
Yeah, how is it that this can get past the First Amendment?
And again, it really does play into a lot of the queries that some people have, like this is a about undue influence in the US in particular. This is a declaration from July 14th, 2022, the Jerusalem US-Israel Strategic Partnership and Joint Declaration, where you find things like, the United States and Israel affirm that among the values the countries share is an unwavering commitment to democracy, rule of law, and the calling of Tikkun Olam, repairing the world. So that's strange.
Yeah,
and there's also a lot of stuff in America where you're just legally not able to boycott Israeli companies, which once again, if you're supposed to be a free market country in a lot of states, you're just not allowed to unless you want to face legal and financial penalties.
Sorry, so do I have to spend my money there or what?
I think it's if you are internationally trading, you're not able to say that you won't trade with particular parts of Israel. So, for example, in this article, it says here, more than 250 million Americans, some 78% of the population, live in states with anti-boycott laws or policies. In November 2018, the global tourism company Airbnb announced it would stop listing properties and settlements, that being the West Bank settlements, as part of a new policy to bar listings that, among other things, contribute to existing human suffering. The day after it announced its decision, Israeli Strategic Affairs Minister Gilead Erdan wrote to the governors of Illinois, New York, Florida, Missouri, and California, encouraging them to take action in relation to commercial dealings with Airbnb. After several states took action against Airbnb, it changed course and said it would not remove settlement listings from its platform. So what this seems to me to be a genuinely undue amount of influence that a foreign government has in U.S. affairs over U.S. businesses that should have the right to determine who they deal with business-wise.
Yeah. But it's because the American politicians are clamoring to do this, and it's probably because, you say, they're being paid by lobbyists.
Yeah. And there's interesting thing about the International Holocaust Remembrance Association, again, which is that the law itself doesn't give any of the definitions it's talking about. It explicitly takes the definitions from their website. It outsources the generation of this law to this organization. Now, this organization...
Does it say that, you know, these definitions can change over time kind of thing? So we refer to this changing list?
Potentially, but Matt Walsh, I think, when he speaks about it, gives quite a good breakdown where he talks about how the IHRA is a explicitly foreign international organization of globalists that was formed by the Swedish Prime Minister in 1998, is also has as members, it has Britain, it has European countries. Israel is also part of it. So the US government is explicitly outsourcing its definitions that people can be tried under domestically to foreign governments.
It's mad, isn't it?
This is a foreign organization dictating law over US citizens, and the US government is complicit in trying to push it through.
Sounds like the EHRC.
Yeah, it does.
Exactly. It's the same sort of thing that we experience over here, where foreign governments get an undue amount of influence over domestic policies in the US.
But we don't have a First Amendment. They do. How can any of this work? You're not allowed to say these things. I'm an American, I'm allowed.
Yeah.
That's the point, isn't it?
That's the question. And some people like Brett Weinstein asking questions about this. And his thought is that the idea of this bill is to get something on the books that can stand up in the courts. The true hazard emerges later. It's informal but deadly serious. The executive will use the definitions in the bill to pressure the platforms to censor inconvenient voices behind the scenes. If the court ever hears the matter, the executive's unconstitutional behavior, not the legislature's, it'll be years down the road. So the worry is that this will be
lawfare.
Very short term for the lawfare. And by the time somebody like the Supreme Court or anybody with a backbone decides to stand up for it and say, hold up for a second, this is unconstitutional, people will have already been censored and taken off platforms. And it's interesting that just in time for this, Nick Fuentes is going to be put back onto Twitter.
Oh, really?
This happened yesterday. What? Right, let me just go through this what happened here. Defiant Els posts something on Twitter.
What was the thing?
Oh, just it was completely unrelated. Completely unrelated hypocrisy. Elon Musk responds, and some random groiper goes, "You work for Jews." Elon says that he's philo-Semitic. Yeah. You know, I try and see the good of all people, but yeah, I do quite like them as a group. Yeah. And then some guy posts this. This is not what Nick Fuentes looks like.
Nick Fuentes in his boy band phase. Okay.
This is what Thomas Dowling looks like.
Yeah,
this is
true,
not
yeah.
what Nick Fuentes looks like. They've tried to turn him into some kind of twinkish Giga Chad. they say, bring him back on. So Elon says, all right. You know what?
Right,
this is hypocritical of me to say that I'm a free speech platform.
Yep.
And just because I don't like the things that he says about this particular group, we can't have him on the platform. But this is a bit convenient timing. Not to say that Elon is complicit in anything, but this law might be getting through the Senate. And if it does, Fuentes is known for being a rabble rouser who gins a lot of people up. And his groupers are quite a consistent presence on Twitter. And if you say anything, they will be first to appear in the replies to anything you post with a picture of Nick Fuentes pointing at you and going, "You are Jewish."
We have very different experiences of Twitter, I have to say.
No, I see this all the time. And and it would be very interesting if Nick Fuentes comes back on, gets a lot of people riled up, and then all of a sudden a lot of people get maybe tracked down because of this new law that's come into place, and he doesn't have any trouble brought to his door, and he just gets, you know, maybe another suspension.
The irony of this is probably going to be Elon Musk who ends up challenging this in the courts.
Potentially.
And it could well be Elon Musk that ends up getting this essentially overturned.
Potentially, but that's everything that's going right now. The law will be going through the Senate very soon if it hasn't already. Yeah, this isn't a great law. This is a terrible law.
Awful.
It's outsourcing a complete destruction of the First Amendment to a random, independent, non-federal organization that's affiliated with foreign governments, one of those foreign governments being Israel, the one that you're explicitly not allowed to criticize through this law. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
I genuinely think it will be Elon Musk who ends up being the one who has to stand on the free speech principle.
But I think
the Supreme Court will overturn it.
Even when it gets overturned, which it kind of has to because it's unconstitutional, it'll already be in the sort of the operating guidelines or whatever for Facebook and all the rest of it. And then it'll stay in there because the danger with HR and corporate policy and all the rest of it is it's not subject to the same scrutiny and, you know, the same level of, it doesn't have to meet the same boundaries or anything as actual laws do. Mm-hmm. So it's almost more dangerous.
Anyway, we'll leave that there.
Right, so I'm going to be talking about Go Woke, Go Broke. I'm also going to say, why don't you come and work for Lotus Eaters?
Yeah.
I do it about once a month. It's great fun. And you don't even need to leave London. I'm assuming everybody lives in London. But because it's difficult getting to Swindon.
It's not
Oxford.
Difficult getting Swindon.
It is.
You just got the wrong train.
I wait to get on the train. I get on the platform. The train comes roughly the time I'm supposed to get on the train. I get on the train. Then while I'm on the train, I'm like writing my stuff for today, and I realise I'm on my way to, I was in Oxford. So I had to get off in Oxford and somehow make it here.
This is not Swindon's fault.
It's amazing.
This is what happens when you try and work with Scotsmen.
Yeah, I'm just impressed I bought a ticket. But I'm going to be talking about Go Woke, Go Broke, the politics edition. Because the adage, go woke, broke, go broke, usually applies to business, but there have been a lot of woke politicians that have been hitting the skids lately. So Scotland's useless leader, Humza Yousaf, was forced into resigning this week. So he's the man famous for his disgust at so many important roles in a country, Scotland, that's almost completely white, being, surprise, surprise, almost completely white. Well, you can hear what he's saying now. I don't know if we can turn the sound up on that.
Let's give it a try.
Click the little... there it is.
There we
go. Lord Justice Clerk, white.
White.
Every
white.
High Court judge, white. The Lord Advocate, white. The Solicitor General, white. The Chief Constable, white. Every Deputy Chief Constable, white. Every Assistant Chief Constable, yeah. White.
So, yeah,
every woman in Iceland, white.
I mean, Scotland's 96%
on the bus, white.
King Alfred, white.
Scotland's 96% white. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not Hackney. Yeah.
It's a moral judgment, though. It's just like, how dare you be Scottish in Scotland? It's like, yes, that's the Longshanks position.
And yeah, we're just talking about how it's been sort of inculcated into just the sort of hive mind that, you know, whiteness is badness. So we can stand in Parliament and be like, oh, this is disgusting, this whiteness. Yeah. It's disgusting. And that's
SNP's
genuine.
Like, put this guy in charge. He's got some ideas.
Yeah. I just like the idea that the entire Scottish Parliament was just looking around at each other going, oh my God.
He's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, unfortunately for him, the Scottish electorate were like, Humza Yousaf, shite. And he's stood down. He's stood down because he's become a complete liability for the next election.
My resignation letter, white.
Yeah. And my removal van, white. the smack my brother-in-law punts, white. So
allegedly.
He's just one of a whole slew of leftist leaders. I was talking about my brother-in-law there.
Oh, right.
He's just one of a whole slew of leftist leaders who've fallen from grace recently. There's Jacinda Ardern, Justin Trudeau, Leo Varadkar, the Peronists in Argentina. And it's always for the same reason. They all stand for high taxes, open borders, state intervention, monitoring and policing speech, green policy, which gives the state huge power and chokes off the free economy and leads to basically communism. Racist and divisive critical race theory, gender ideology that harms women and children, and all this increasing totalitarianism is delivered under the veneer of kindness with a caring tilt of the head.
But that's not why Humza had to go, is it?
No.
Humza had to go for not being sufficiently woke. Like the LGBT Greens were like, no coalition with you because you're not woke enough on the environment.
Yeah, I'm going to go through what he got wrong in a moment. But basically he had to, he was in a minority government, so he had to do a power sharing agreement with the Greens, even though they only had a few seats. They had a really outsized influence in the Scottish Parliament. And obviously the Greens are just batshit insane. They're 4:30 a.m. at a house party. People are eating plant food. That level of insane. You know what I mean?
What house parties are you going to?
Scottish ones.
I suppose
the Scottish Greens.
So they're insane. So they were pushing all this gender ideology and also a very extreme and rapid sort of decarbonisation of the economy. But anyway, basically all these woke leaders, they're all. They've sort of brought the sort of fascism, the totalitarianism of the past, but now it's sort of rebranded and dressed up. You've got Jacinda Ardern in a cozy sweater, with all feminine vibes and stuff. And they say...
vibes? I mean, equestrian vibes.
Equestrian vibes. They'll say, we're restricting your rights and punishing you to keep you safe, which is the exact same sort of explanation that an abusive husband gives when he locks you in the cellar. And they've also got complete incompetence regarding any material improvements to people's lives, such as building houses or collecting bins. And lockdown was like steroids for them. I think that's why they got way out of hand, because people were scared. But, everybody used to think that British people would never stand for having our rights stripped away from us. But actually, it turns out most British people love it. They're like, please pay me lots of money to stay at home and not do any work. And, I'll just sit here and I won't make any trouble and I'll put on a mask. And
just get Boris Johnson to bumble out. Oh, sorry, chaps, we're shutting down the country. And everyone's like, okay, then.
Yeah. And unfortunately,
to be fair, the sort of responses I got from a lot of my friends was that it was really the sit on your ass playing video games, getting paid for it, which was the real selling point for that, sadly.
Mm. We worked all through lockdowns, God damn it.
Yeah, so did I. And I went outside. And I shook hands with people.
I went outside for more than my allotted 1 hour per day. I'm such a rebel.
I was on three continents.
God,
I went to.
That's literally a true thing that you can say, though. We were allotted 1 hour a day to go out for a walk, and I went out for two.
I needed to get my 10K steps in.
Rebel.
We'll start with Hamza. So he was the first Muslim leader of a major political party, although it's not going to be a major political party for much longer. So he replaced Nicola Sturgeon, who herself made waves in 2014 as the first pansexual goblin to lead Scotland, before she had to step down in a cloud of awkward questions being asked about male rapists being sent to female prisons and SNP money potentially being sent to mobile home dealers. So Hamza, this is an amazing interview. This is her being interviewed about
this?
Gender ideology. This is the bit that broke her.
You
can see her break.
Haven't answered that question.
Well, that's not the point that we're dealing with
here. That's the question I'm asking.
Trans women are women, but in the prison context, there is no automatic right for a trans woman.
So there are contexts where a trans woman is not a woman?
No, there is... There is circumstances in which a trans woman will be housed in the male prison estate.
Is there any context in which a woman born as a woman will be housed in the male estate?
Look, we're talking here about trans women.
And I'm now asking about women born as women.
I don't think there are circumstances there, but...
So it's different for trans women?
Well, yes.
So they're not equal?
That is not...
Why is that, Nicola?
A risk assessment process done for trans women that takes account of the nature of the crime. Significant concern arises out of sexual crime and whether it's appropriate for them to be in a female prison or a male prison.
My question is...
That's so funny.
That's so good.
Yeah,
but it's like the Joe Swinson meltdown where it's like, define woman. It's like, well, I'm... They know they're on things.
Yeah, yeah. Because you've got these just broad platitudes on the left, like Daniel Radcliffe being like, oh, trans women are women. And it's, you know, and everybody's like, oh, well, don't know, trans women are women. It's like, what does that mean? What does that mean? So I say I'm a woman. That's obviously a nonsense. And here you can see, I mean, a male rapist suddenly saying, oh, by the way, I'm a woman. Surprise. Then, like, you know, you can't... There's no amount of, like, logical Rubik's cubing you can do to make that work.
I mean, I've always said when it comes to these sorts of subjects that the left's kryptonite is the follow-up question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what does that mean?
Yeah, that's exactly... What does that mean? That's the end of it, isn't it?
And also truth and basic logic are also very tough for them to deal with. So after Sturgeon... Sturgeon left. Hamza won the leadership election by a ball hair, so he beat Kate Forbes 52-48, which funnily enough was the same margin as Brexit. But the difference being this time round, Hamza didn't say the result was far too close and demand a rerun. He was happy to accept being leader. And Guardian readers were delighted. There was the first Muslim prayer in Bute House, so this is the official Scottish First Minister's residence, which was celebrated as wonderfully progressive, even though you know for a fact that if that was Kate Forbes doing a Christian prayer, they'd be like, oh, what is this medieval retrograde religion being involved in government? So there you can see the some interesting looking Muslims there. One of them looks quite... So I mean,
is he walking to the wrong room?
Yeah, he's too embarrassed and too polite to say something. Yeah,
it's nice he brought people together from, you know, across religions and stuff. So
have we got the clip of him falling over on that scooter?
Oh, you know what? I don't.
That's my favourite clip of him.
It's
what's he even doing on that scooter?
And scooters are hard to run on. Yeah, it's in a hospital, I think. So it's one that people in hospitals use to get around on.
I thought
one
he was prancing around or something.
Right. Yeah. So he's in a hospital and he comes...
I don't care what the context is. He falls over, it's great.
Yeah. But interestingly, religion did encroach on his governing. So another politician alleged that Hamza missed a key vote on gay rights to appease his mosque, or under pressure from his mosque. So, don't know if that's true. I don't think Hamza admitted to it, but that's certainly...
I can't believe that Muslims aren't allies. I could have figured this one out.
Has there ever been any evidence for it anywhere else in the world? It's, who knows?
Let's ask Iran.
And also, Hamza's got a history of using the law to try and punish people for presumed racism, so he tried to sue a nursery for racism after they turned his application down. And then it turned out the nursery was also ethnic minority. So
it was run by Indians.
Yeah,
so maybe it was racism.
All right. So But that was, you know, he didn't continue with the legal action because it wasn't the wrong kind of racism for him.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean?
It's only bad when
white people do it, apparently. And his hate crime law, which I ran for election against and stuff. And man, if he just listened to me, If he'd just listened to me at the time, he could have saved himself so much hassle. His hate crime law was introduced to make it easier for people to accuse each other of racism, because, you know, if there's one problem with modern society is that we don't accuse each other of racism enough.
We should get our hate monster. We got sent a little hate monster.
We did.
Have you got the outfit?
It's a little hate monster toy. He's our little friend.
Comedy Unleashed have got a full-on like outfit you can wear and stuff.
You know, he keeps track of all of the hate speech in the office. Good member of the team.
Busy guy.
Unironically, there's probably some sort of MI5 bug in it.
So yeah, they had this.
Oh God, I'm so screwed.
No, man, I'd watch out for that. I don't trust anything anymore. But the hate monster basically spaffed hundreds of thousands of pounds of taxpayers' money, English taxpayers, obviously, money on adverts.
Is there any other kind?
No Scottish taxpayers.
Well, they're all leaving and coming to England.
Yeah, I know.
That's another thing. Humza put up the tax brackets in Scotland, and then he announced he released this video saying, oh, people are, we put up the taxes for rich people in Scotland, and now more rich people are moving to Scotland. It's like, no, they're not.
That's not
not happening.
I get to pay more.
Oh, I can contribute more to the NHS. I mean, they could have anyway. It's not that the government's going to turn away money if you want to overpay your taxes, but yeah, it's a nonsense.
What a bizarre lie that is.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's not so. Yeah, this law was just an absolute calamity. It was really vaguely worded. It allowed anyone to report anyone if they perceived someone to be stirring up hatred, whatever that means. Nobody understood it, including the police, and so it resulted in thousands and thousands of complaints being issued under it, and the police had to investigate all of them, so there was a huge amount of overtime, huge amount of expense, and the most reported person in the first week was Humza Yousaf.
Come on, that's gold.
Yeah, and only two of the incidents were actually deemed to be, you know, actual real proper incidents.
Thank you very much, John.
There we go.
Here we have. Come on. Wait for it.
Why is he on a mobility scooter?
I think, doesn't he have a bandaged foot or something? Is that why? Because he's holding up one leg.
Oh, he was actually.
Yeah. Oh, and he went straight onto it.
Genuinely,
as well.
He was genuinely like.
Right. Sore. I feel less good about
that guy. that poor man running beside him.
We are in the interest of time, let's move on.
Oh, yeah, sorry. He fell out with the Green Party as he ditched green policies. And I don't know who's voting for green politicians in Scotland. It's a very cold country, and it's insane that people could be elected on the promise of keeping it cold instead of warming up. And also, Scotland's custom designed to deal with rising sea levels. It's all mountains, so you move a bit higher up the mountain, start growing some grapes instead of turnips. It's great. But green policy, to be honest, doesn't have much to do with climate change anymore. It's all just like rainbow lanyards like you can see on them there.
Wouldn't it also destroy all industry in the Highlands? Because most of the people in the Highlands...
Well, all three people that are...
But no. I think a lot of the people who do live up there are all employed in the fossil fuel
industry.
It's true,
there's oil and gas, which I think Patrick Harvey described... Yeah, Patrick Harvey, the leader of the Greens in Scotland, described anybody working in oil and gas as far right. As a far right extremist. It's like, all right, are you mental? Like, what went in the engine, the bus that took you to work this morning, Harvey? Well, he's probably got a chauffeur-driven limo.
But just some little old guy is just like, what? You know?
Yeah.
But what I love about this is their campaign slogan must be, keep Scotland wet, miserable, and cold.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, yeah.
Yeah. And they got some real sinister, is that, what's her name, Maggie Chapman or something on the far left? Literally on the far left.
Doesn't look very happy, yeah.
Her gender ideology, her pushing a gender ideology, I mean, it's kind of, Scotland's lucky in a way that it's still tethered to Britain because, you know, Westminster can veto some of the crazier stuff like the gender ideology.
And she's giving you that longhouse stare.
Yeah.
That's what she's doing.
Yeah. She wants you in the gulag, you know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, it's crazy that not long ago the SNP's grip on politics was almost considered to be an electoral dictatorship because the pull of independence would be such a sort of motivating factor for voters that they'd vote for the SNP so they could do whatever they want. But that's changing now. So Humza made a speech full of fake emotion, like he's Ellen DeGeneres apologising for throwing a latte at an intern. And also, his resignation speech made it about race. He said, people that look like me were not in positions of political influence. Now there's a Hindu prime minister, a Welsh black leader, a Muslim mayor of London, an Asian Scottish leader. And then he said, I'm going to continue standing up for minorities who aren't heard. And it's like, how can they have no voice and be underrepresented and also have all the top positions?
Also, wouldn't it be a bit weird if Britain, majority white British country, was ruled by foreign-born people or people of foreign extraction. Isn't that the problem they had with the British occupation of India?
Yeah, I think it would be nice to have some parity. Like, just, you know, so 86% of Britain is white. So what's wrong with 86% of, you know, the representation?
Lack of diversity.
Yeah, the equal representation. I think it should be fair. Moving on to Jacinda Ardern. New Zealand's leader Jacinda Ardern swept to power promising to put a kind and caring face on globalist communism. She wore a headscarf after the Christchurch attacks, but sadly it was just virtue signalling and she didn't ban her daughters from education or step aside and let her husband take several wives. But COVID gave her a chance to flex her authoritarian muscles. She completely closed the borders, which for some reason is absolutely fine. You can close the borders if you want to stop a highly survivable virus, but for any other reason, oh, that's so racist. Oh, you can't close the borders for any other reason.
Interestingly, we kept ours open and we took like 500,000 people in a year. Yeah. It's like, what?
Thanks, Boris.
Yeah.
So she clamped down on free speech. Or as she calls it, disinformation and misinformation. She called free speech a weapon of war which must be restricted. And of course, when she says disinformation and misinformation, she just means ideas and arguments she doesn't like. There's so many things that previously were misinformation or disinformation that are now coming true, like the idea that COVID vaccines could cause harm. Now that's been admitted in court by AstraZeneca. It's, it's an obvious thing. But the thing with woke leaders, and I think Jacinda is a classic example of this, they talk all this woke progressive stuff, but the reality, the nuts and bolts of governing just is a complete calamity. So mass migration and inflation made house prices soar in New Zealand, so she announced a grand plan to build 100,000 homes. Do you know how many were built? 1,000.
Wow, I was going to say 20,000. You know?
Yeah, 1,366. And it's not like they don't have space. So, you know, there's loads of space in New Zealand. So she's good at saying kind-sounding words, but bad at actually doing anything practical. So she stood down in 2023 saying, "I am human. Politicians are human," which was reassuring to those of us who thought she was part donkey. Justin Trudeau...
I'm human, she lied. Okay, yeah, carry on.
Justin Trudeau was the poster boy for the left, so he was the son of a previous political leader. I'm not talking about Fidel Castro.
Are you not?
Why would you even
this
think?
Is a completely unrelated just, image.
Because his mum's there with her arm on Fidel Castro, like she fancies him, and just because he looks like Fidel
just look
Castro.
At Fidel Castro, and then this guy on the this is Pierre Trudeau. That's, he's supposed to be his dad.
Yeah,
it's like no.
Which one looks like
no.
Justin Trudeau?
Yeah, I know. Sorry. I know. I'm sorry. It's just James, obviously not
James Hewitt in the background there. Just popping up. Yeah, man, it's so funny because he looks so much. Like
especially
Fidel Castro.
This picture as well.
Yeah, like yeah.
Spitting image.
Yeah.
I mean, do you reckon this was the arrangement? Because he seems pretty happy with it. He's just there, sat at the side while he brings the bull in.
Well, he was a famous cuckold.
Fidel.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
His wife was known to be a sleut.
And Fidel. Fidel Castro is a total top shagger. Like,
massive womanizer.
I look at him.
I'm the dictator of Cuba, of course I get birds.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it wasn't all consensual because he's a dictator, but, you know, there you go. But yeah, anyways, Justin's dad, just for the avoidance of doubt, was definitely Pierre Trudeau, who's the guy in the foreground nowhere near his mum that doesn't look anything like him.
If you disagree with us, Justin, feel free to sue us.
Yeah. So a harsh lockdown. Harsh lockdown in Canada.
Would he have to do a DNA test?
I don't know. I don't see why not.
He would, yeah.
Yeah, there are trucker protests in Canada. The truckers were basically protesting against vaccine mandates. And it's kind of unfair. Like, you know, all through lockdown, we had all the working class people in, you know, Tesco's and whatever, you know, in the NHS, were having to keep working and, you know, put themselves in harm's way. And then the government steps in and is like, oh, you've all got to get vaccines. It's like, they're the ones risking their lives. Why are you sort of putting this medical mandate on them? It's pretty disgusting. So they had a protest against the whole thing. And Trudeau accused anyone and everyone who questioned lockdown of being racist, sexist, and transphobic, which revealed...
How did you know?
Which revealed that these terms... Here he is. People who don't believe they're often misogynists, also often racists. It's a group that...
he was talking French, wasn't he?
Ah, even worse. If I'm going to be called a racist, I want it to be in English.
So, yeah, he's basically... And like, where would transphobic and misogynist and racist come from when you're talking about people who don't want to get the vaccine? And also racist, most of the people, like the sort of vaccine hesitancy was highest in ethnic minority groups because they're the ones who've, you know, historically...
Not trusted the government,
you know, especially when it comes to medical experiments.
So,
he invoked the Emergencies Act for the first time in Canada's history.
Froze the bank accounts.
Froze bank accounts of anybody who donated. So this woman donated $50 to the Freedom Convoy. She can't pay for groceries because she's had her bank accounts frozen. She's got kids and stuff. She's a single mum. It's disgusting.
She's also a racist, though.
And a transphobe and a misogynist. And a misogynist, self-defeating. And one of Trudeau's ministers even said, this is the funniest thing, is one of his ministers said that the truckers honking their horns, if we move on to the next tab, the truckers honking their horns was a Nazi dog whistle because honk honk is an acronym for Heil Hitler. And
oh wait,
what?
yeah,
that's the biggest reach I've ever seen. That's amazing.
The only one I've seen that's bigger than that is Posey Parker with the, you know, when she was playing with her zip, and they said that's a far right racist dog whistle.
What? I didn't see
when she did played with her zip. She was doing this.
Okay. That is
so mad. So when I'm driving through and some cyclist wanker decides to cut in front of me and I honk my horns, I'm actually throwing out a secret dog whistle.
You are.
Take that.
I like the source they have to use here is Urban Dictionary.
But she was looking for something, went on Urban Dictionary, guys, you're never going to believe this.
Yeah. We've got them now.
And Canada announced a hate crime law that like goes way beyond even the Scottish one. So it includes a clause for pre-crime. So if a judge thinks that you think bad thoughts and might commit hate speech in the future...
Oh, minority report.
At least Minority Report was like for murders and stuff. This is like, oh, you might say something that's naughty. You know what I mean? Like, Jesus.
Tom Cruise being sent off to get people for thinking the N-word.
This guy posted something on Telegram, you know?
So, I mean, Trudeau's not out yet, but there's an election scheduled for next year.
He's going to get crushed.
He's going to be absolutely crushed. And also, half of the voters want him out before the election. That's how bad it is. I'll just quickly do the Peronists. So they were in power in Argentina for decades, keeping their power through this sort of corrupt system of patronage where they, you know, through trade unions and other...
Massive welfare state. Groups.
Yeah, massive welfare state, just basically paying money to voters to vote for them. If they don't vote for the Peronists, then, you know, that the flow of money tails off. But then they have to borrow money to be able to afford that, and you know, it's an unsustainable way to run an economy, like all socialist economies. As Margaret Thatcher said, the trouble with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money. Although I can understand Argentina not wanting to follow Margaret Thatcher's advice, maybe. But Argentina used to be a really successful country, had the same GDP as Germany.
Then it got taken over by socialists.
Then it got taken over by socialists, so did Germany.
Yeah, it did, actually. Yeah. Good point.
And then eventually things got so bad. This is what gives me hope for the future. Things got so bad in Argentina that they voted in the greatest man who's ever lived, Javier Milei. And he just went through and all these like stupid fucking nonsensical, sorry, I shouldn't swear, stupid nonsensical things on in the government departments, like, you know, the equivalent of the Arts Council and stuff. He's just
Women's and Equality Committee. Afuera!
And all this sort of stuff. So, and he's, in just a few months, he's tamed inflation. There's a rally.
Stabilized the country.
Stabilized the economy. He's turning it around. Obviously, you know, there's a few people who've lost, you know, they're not getting to suckle at that teat of,
communists.
Of free money. So they don't like it. But yeah, he's saved Argentina. And Leo Varadkar, he was the first gay ethnic minority clown on roller skates to become...
Just as a quick thing, can you imagine just how well he slept on the night after he fired like 100,000 communists from the government?
Yeah.
I bet he slept like a baby.
This is what we're working
on. I know. This is what winning looks like.
Yeah. And we're ratcheting. Every Western country, the share of GDP spent by the government is just ratcheting relentlessly up year on year. We're all just slowly, like a frog being boiled, drifting into communism. And so eventually we're going to, you know, things are going to get so bad. At the moment, you know, the mass migration is being justified by economists because they say, well, we have to maintain our payments on the debt that we've got. At some point, that's going to become unsustainable. Mm. And all this, you know, all the current way of doing things is going to have to crumble. It's just, you know, do we do it now or do we do it in 5 years or 10 years' time?
I've said before, none of this ends until London is flooded with homeless Whitehall staff members.
So
gotta have a goal, guys.
So I know we've covered some of Ireland already, but yeah, Varadkar was the, you know, he's the first. He's I think he's half Indian or something, and he's gay and all the rest. So it was an amazing, you know, moment
was
for Ireland.
Gay as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty
I
sure.
Didn't
yeah,
even know that part.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, he became Taoiseach, which is what the Irish call their leader. And yeah, it's interesting. The political chant of Ireland for the Irish completely flipped and became Ireland for anyone but the Irish.
Yeah.
Never mind a all hard border or anything. They just wanted no border. But this led to record numbers of migrants who, just like in Britain, were often bussed into working class communities who hadn't asked for them, instead of being housed in the middle class communities who had demanded the open borders. And so, yeah, this is the Dublin riots kicking off. And we're told, you know, they're just an excuse for far-right people to loot, you know, far-right white supremacists. There you can see one of the far-right white supremacists looting right there. Oh, he must have been on holiday.
I need this for my kids. I don't know.
Yeah, and Varadkar later lost control of a referendum that he'd expected to win very easily. It had been dressed up in progressive language as a chance to get rid of very old-fashioned, very sexist language about women in Ireland's constitution. But what the proposals really would have done is, one, they would have reduced women's rights by making the state no longer responsible for supporting them as carers. And more importantly, would have changed the definition of the family by saying it could be any durable relationship. So a family isn't, you know, husband, wife, kids,
any
and all
the durable relationship.
Yeah, so not even like, you know, a married spouses, which, you know, could be two women, two men, like a durable relationship. It basically would have, you know.
So like, you know, you could be married to your dog.
Yeah, you could greatly, you don't even need to be married. Just say I'm in a durable relationship with my dog. It basically meant it would have greatly expedited mass immigration to Ireland, because you could have said, oh, these 14 guys, I shared a flat with them. We're all very close. We're in a durable relationship.
We're in a WhatsApp group.
Yeah. So they've all got to come in. And, you know, legally, that would have been that would have been binding. And also they proposed a viciously punitive hate crime law and restrictions on the internet. So Varadkar decided to jump before he's pushed and stood down. So the good news is that voters are rejecting these woke ideologists who rose to power promising progressive government and then got bogged down in trying to control speech and criminalize opinions to make it illegal to oppose them. But the bad news is that woke politicians have moved the Overton window so far that the conservative politicians that replace them are also woke. So there's barely any real opposition in the West, unless you get, you know, reform or something like that. So sadly, it seems like we're doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past and gradually drift into communism before Javier Milei sets us free.
God bless the Argentinian Empire. Mm. Let's go to the video comments. You know, it's like they're paralyzed with fear, turning 30 and becoming unattractive hags. Just like, well, I mean, I'm just going to be a hag at 30. It's like, would you?
31, crone.
Yeah, exactly.
32, corpse.
Yeah, just, I mean, that's literally what I
ghouls.
This isn't some sort of joke, you know. This is my birthday.
Young people are worried that they're getting old at 30.
But hasn't that always been the case?
No, not really. Because like they're really concerned now, but we haven't got time. So
I'll let you all know when I hit 30.
Yeah, let's carry on with the next one.
Yeah, you're right. Swindon's pretty shit. It's probably a good thing there's no other place called that. Oh, that's it. That's my video comment. That's all I wanted to say.
There is another place.
There is one more thing. For some strange reason, your twin town is Disney World.
Yeah, I noticed
and
that.
And I wish I was making it up. This was done 15 bloody years ago.
What?
Whose bright idea was this?
Swindon Council, like, we got this. I've no idea. There's literally nothing Disney related here.
Maybe they were hoping it would lead to a Disney World opening up here.
Oh, yeah.
Probably would have been a great idea.
Yeah.
Disney World Swindon. Let's go for it.
Callum, I just wanted to wish you all the very best for the future. I hope all will go as well with your future travels. And also to say that, as fans of the Lotus Eaters, both my mother and I will miss you and your wit and your insights. Thank you so much for everything that you've done with the Lotus Eaters over the years. And we will always have very fond memories of you.
I'll pass that along to him.
That's very sweet. We'll make sure he sees that video.
Go for it.
I've been working mandatory overtime for the past couple months, 50 hours a week minimum, so I haven't had time to do any videos as of late, but I just had to get one in and say, Callum, good luck with whatever it is you're going to do, and God be with you. I have thoroughly enjoyed having you as a presenter on the podcast, and I'm just a little sad you won't be there for all 1,000.
I'm sure he'll come back to visit. Let's go to the next one.
Good luck on your next non-Lotusy adventure, Callum. I will always remember you. Ubba hubba oga.
No. Bad robo waifu. Go to horny jail.
I feel bad that Callum isn't on the podcast to hear all of this.
Show him these afterwards. Yeah. I'm sure he'll really appreciate the sentiment. I'm going to miss him as well.
What we'll do is we won't go to any more video comments then for now, because we're running out of time as well.
We have them in lads over.
Maybe. Neo Unrealist says, Ireland population 4.9 million, US population 330 million, US population with Irish ancestry 32 million.
Wow.
Hell.
Shock that a nation with 36 times the population and 6 times more ethnic Irish notice. Yeah, wow, that's amazing. And he sends another one as well. Regarding the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, the GOP knows it's unconstitutional and it will be struck down. There's a pure political play to force Democrats and Biden to make a vote that will crush their chance to win 2024.
Oh.
Interesting analysis. So is the point it... I don't follow the logic there. Do you?
Well, I don't really know how it'll hurt the Democrats. I mean, maybe their own base.
Seeing as it's bipartisan support on both of them, maybe the hope is that the Senate, the GOP candidates, and well, senators, will strike it down, and it'll look bad for the Democrats if they aren't the ones who are seen striking it down.
Also, it's probably really pissing off the Ilhan Omar contingent.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And young people. I just saw a survey that said that 40% of Gen Zers in the States see Israel as a white supremacist state.
Well, there's something to take into account there, which is that I think of most Gen Z.
They're foreign-born.
In the US, yeah, they're non-white.
Right.
Gen Z, at least, I think, maybe 2002 onwards, are the first majority non-white generation.
Right, right.
So that's probably a lot to do with it as well.
So that must be progressive and good, then.
I can only assume so. We'll see. See how that works out.
Mad, isn't it? Right, okay. Lord Nerevar says, despite being an Englishman, I don't think I'm alone in wishing the Irish the best in their resistance to being colonized as we have. Pride in one's country and people is a positive thing to be commended, even if you're Scottish.
That's nice. We'll allow it for you, Leo.
Lars says, the feminist patriarchy conspiracy theory is based on a criticism of the Old Testament family structure, aka Jewish family structure. Feminism will be labeled anti-Semitic when?
Well, I hate to break this about some of the OG feminists. But true, that is fair, actually.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. So at least we can finally get rid of feminism.
To be fair, the OG feminists were more pushing back against the 1950s than they were like the traditionalist family structure, so to speak.
Hmm.
At least in the 1960s, the more radical feminist as feminism got,
yeah, that's where
it's really started to be anti-natalist, you could say.
Yeah, the problem was men inventing things that made women's lives easier. That's literally what.
Get back to scrubbing the dishes, dude.
Yeah, sorry.
That's what you're after.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, Furious Dan says, go work, go broke is fun and feels true, but backwards. Companies go work when they're floundering and need ESG money, but the ESG money is never enough and they crash eventually. There's a lot of controversy over this, but politically, at least, there is some meat on the bone there.
Go work, go broke, it's hit and miss. At best,
yeah, it can be. It depends. In the case of Warhammer, it would be the case if they went fully woke. But anyway.
Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League definitely went broke,
yeah.
For instance.
Yeah.
And that was a really good example of it working. It doesn't always work.
But anyway, we're going to have to end there because we're out of time. If you want more from us, of course, go subscribe to lowseas.com. Help us keep the lights on because, of course, we've been demonetized everywhere else. And join us again in half an hour for Lad's Hour when we'll be going through Callum's favorite piece of autism, Fallout.
And subscribe to my YouTube channel.
And that.